everybody, welcome back to another episode of You Haven't Seen That Podcast or YHST for short. I'm Isaac.
I'm Alva.
And this is a show where we cover movies on that growing list of films that has people asking us the question, You haven't seen that? Intermission edition, which all of these in the past few months have been intermission editions. We will eventually get back to doing full movie breakdowns. In fact, if you're listening to us in the future, it's well into January, but people that are watching us live streaming can do so at
FREHED Films on TikTok and Instagram.
That's Forehead Films. And on there, you can follow a lot of like the little videos that we do, movies, smaller formatted movie reviews.
Ask questions.
You can ask us questions. You can comment on what you thought about some of the movies and things like
that. Recommendations.
Yeah, well, recommendations are appreciated, and I was going to say recommended. And if you, again, you can live stream, you can watch us live streaming on TikTok. We specifically now do it on TikTok. But if you're listening to this in the future and TikTok did get banned, then the default will be to go to Instagram.
Until we tell you where else to go.
Yeah, because we would have paused the stream for a couple of weeks, taking a break. But if you're listening in the future, there's a steady flow for episodes coming out because we you know, in our current timeline, which is your past, our present, have been like double dipping episodes. And anyhow, technically, this was supposed to be our end of year episode, but we got busy with some stuff. So we're wrapping up 2024, even though it's now 2025. Happy New Year, everybody.
Hopping we are.
I don't have any applause or fanfare, so just imagine it. I'm not doing it in post.
There you go. I got it for you.
So we're covering two movies today, Alvin.
It's Baby Girl and A Complete Unknown.
And then after that, we are going to finish off our year-end review brackets. If you remember on the previous episode, my brackets, out of our total of 64 movies, we split it in half. So whatever the math is, 32 movies. Terrifier 3 won out for the Isaac division, the Isaac conference. Mm-hmm. And we have another 32 movies, but that's for the Alva conference, Alva division. And we're going to go head-to-head. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I because you're like, oh, Nosferatu's on mine. I go, yeah, but so is Wicked.
Fuck! Forgot about that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And then after that, since we are now in 2025, well, why not give our most anticipated movies for 2025? And the list is bountiful.
I made sure to have a list.
So let's begin with Baby Girl.
Baby Girl.
Go ahead, Alva. Kick it off.
A high-powered CEO who puts her career and family on the line when she begins a torrid affair with her very much younger intern, starring Nicole Kidman, Harris Dickinson, and Antonio Banderas. And let me tell you, this movie is for those book talk girlies. It's very much like a book, like one of those spicy books. For sure. I think I enjoyed it more than you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. But I also was like, okay, where is she going with this? Her scenes were just amazing. I don't think I had a problem with anything in the movie.
So it was an interesting movie because it rolled the line. For me, it towed the line of like cinematically dramatic in that kind of unreal way. And then there were those moments were then broken up by very real and, like, dare say, vulnerable moments that kind of, it kind of tripped me up for the most part. There were aspects of the movie that I highly related to, especially like as a married couple. And this movie deals with a handful of things, feminism, taking power back, sexuality, marriage, exploration, infidelity.
Kinks.
And kinks, yeah. It's about one of those big ones. I actually wrote that down, kinks, and, you know, how one deals with those by themselves as a CEO, as a female, as a part of a marriage, and how that goes.
Shame, too. Also, yeah.
But the thing is, for me, and this is just for me, because when we were driving back watching the movie, I was like, I don't know. It didn't sit right with me in how, kind of like how it was, I don't know, executed in... Nicole Kidman was amazing. What's the other guy's name?
Harris Dickinson.
Harris Dickinson. For me, he was okay. Initially, he was set up or portrayed as this, like, you know, this guy knows what he wants, a very powerful individual, you know, kind of boyish. But then it sort of not necessarily falls apart. I can't think of a better phrasing, but they kind of abandon that here and there. And he portrays his character as like a little bit silly. And there's these moments that are awkward, and I don't know if I was supposed to laugh at those, and as well as the crowd with which we watched it.
So I feel like those awkward moments where, like, the crowd was laughing very, didn't know if to laugh or not, were those moments where it's such a intimate moment that's happening, but because in movies, intimate moments are straight out, like, sex scenes, people don't understand, like, the concept of other ways to do that intimacy on screen. Mm-hmm. So those were the moments where people were, like, very, hey, 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 and I'm just like, I'm all for it, let's keep going. But that's just from me. I
mean, well, the intimate scenes were done, like, I think tastefully. I mean, there is some nudity, but even though it revolves around a lot of sex, you get some sex scenes, but nothing's gratuitous. Mm-hmm. You know, there are other movies where, in fact, hell, there's other movies like starring Nicole Kidman where there's just like gratuitous nudity, mm-hmm. which I have no problem with. But it was done in a tasteful manner. And may I just be a guy for a moment? Nicole Kidman's stunning as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what was kind of awkward, though, is, you know, if ever you go to an AMC theater, she's presenting the movie, you know, we make movies better. And then the scene opens, the movie opens with moaning. And I'm like, she does make movies better.
Because here they are. No, but the whole thing, like,
we make movies wetter. But I'm. All that in post.
Yeah. But the whole thing was those moments where it was, you could feel the energy in the theater go awkward, was the moments where I'm just like, they're doing this correctly. Mm-hmm. Because that's exactly what the whole point of the movie is.
Yeah.
It's like making you feel that character's shame for having a kink or having to do those, I guess, the teasing before the action.
Call that foreplay.
The foreplay. Sorry.
Just a glimpse into our marriage.
Wow.
What's that called?
You gotta lick it before you stick it.
Now I forgot my thought. Anyways, a lot of men were, like, especially, like, the two guys that were next to me.
Yeah.
You can tell, like, they're like, yeah. And then they're like... What the fuck is going on right now? Like, I could literally sense, like, their awkwardness. And they're like, do we walk out of this movie or do we sit through it because we paid for it?
Was there a couple that actually walked out?
Yeah, yeah. So I've, as one does, scrolling through TikTok and stuff like that, or just, like, social media, there's a lot of people who are like, don't see this movie. It was I don't know. I didn't understand it, this and that. And... there's also a lot of, like, we're like, no, this movie is perfect. And a lot of people walked out. And I'm like, yes, because they don't understand that level of intimate intelligence. That
intimate intelligence is a good phrase.
That.
Where'd you learn that?
Myself.
My brain.
That men don't understand and they walk out.
Tell me about it, honey.
I just did right now. Mm. Or just other couples, too. They don't understand that language. And it kind of shows... especially with the men who, like, would walk out.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of some of that, by the way, I forgot to mention that Antonio Banderas is in here. Antonio Banderas is in here. It plays a small role, but strong role.
Yeah, it's there in the beginning.
Well, the reason why I bring him up is his character is married to Nicole Kidman's character. And there's, out of everything in the movie, I kind of called bullshit. And you were kind of going back and forth with me on this. And I tend to die in my hell. They're supposed to have been together for, you know, whatever, at least like 20 years or whatever it is, right? So they're well established. They have two kids. One of them's like 10 years old and the other is a teenager, like 16. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and he's a theater director and she's a CEO of a tech company. And they are intelligent in their marriage and they are open with most of the intimate moments. I mean, the movie opens up with that to establish like how Nicole Kidman's character views sex. But the part that I call bullshit was they're so well, like, vibing and communication as a married couple that she has this one, and I'm not going to spoil anything, that she has this one particular issue, a specific kink, things to, you know, get her off or whatever, and she doesn't full force open herself up to her husband. Now, I know the whole movie is about, like, exploring that and, you know, regaining your strength and power and confidence with it, but I... in particular called BS that a married couple, again, is intelligent at that level, that far into their marriage. hasn't fully figured that out. To each their own, but, you know, for it, not going to tell you about our bedroom, but like, with us, we're really good and we figured most stuff out.
Yeah, but the whole thing of the movie is like, yeah, their relationship might have started with having full confidence with each other and talking to it. Mm-hmm. But along the way, she became a people pleaser to him. So in those moments that she's making sure that he feels satisfied when she's not satisfied, because it's like that whole male ego. It's like, well, you know, I finished, but I didn't, but I don't want to tell you that I didn't, or if I did, because I'm in a marriage or all this other stuff. But at the same time, it's like, I'm also trying to protect you so you're not feeling less.
No, and I fully understand that. I fully grasp that. That's why she didn't, you know, just outright say it. But still, I feel like the conflict that she had, the particular issue that she had, is such, I mean, you would have to admit, like, in a marriage, is such a big issue that it would have at least been discussed. And then, again, no spoilers, but it then is brought up in such a way where you're like, oh, it's sort of implied that it was never brought up in the past, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
I guess, but I don't know. I can't really agree with you on that thought, just because I feel like how she was acting with her husband, she was kind of like needing to have power. And anytime they showed scenes with her family, it showed like her trying to be present, but also trying to like go somewhere where it's, she has power in her mind. So she doesn't feel like, well, my family doesn't love me. My kids don't love me. Like, you saw how the kids would treat her in a way. So my husband is being blind to this issue. I may have brought it before, but maybe how I brought it was he got his feelings hurt, but then now my children over here, because I'm also trying to be a wife, a mother, and a powerful, like a CEO.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I have power here. What makes me feel amazing because I get to call the shots, but here I'm back burner.
Agreed.
The whole thing, it's like, yeah, you see that and all that stuff, but it's like, it's more on like the actions, her facial expressions, and everything that shows that she's lacking one thing here. Yeah. But she would rather have her mind over here because she feels like she's important. She feels like she's someone. She feels like she's being listened to and not ignored. And that was the whole point of the movie, where she's trying to get that and put it into her personal life.
Yeah, no, totally. And you, by the way, like I agree also, because when we were driving down the hill, I was, you know, discussing these things that I was like, it wasn't really driving for me. And you did explain a lot of the similar things on the drive back. I was like, oh, you know what? Now you put it in perspective, specifically like, you know, the wife's perspective that would, you know, it's all part of communication that made me like ponder it. And and really it sat with me. It still sits with me. I do still struggle. I think we've even said on pod, I think specifically talking about Fantastic Mr. Fox, of the length that we've come from the start of our marriage about 10 years ago. And we continue to grow even still now. Like I do love that we learn stuff about each other. This one in particular, though, it was, I understand from your perspective. I am trying to understand it as well from like the male perspective and the husband's perspective. Because in the end, Nicole Kidman's character, not necessarily a great person.
Mm-hmm.
That's the tricky part. That's the gray area for me.
Yeah. And I understand why like Nicole Kidman's character decides to go in the route of having that affair. Just because it gave her that power. That the whole thing is, men can do this. Men can have affairs and have the power and have all this, both within the family and outside family, like both personal and work lives. But if a woman does it, it's like, no, that's frowned upon. That's looked upon. She's giving up her family for this one little thing. And it's like, well, you're switching the roles here. And I think that the whole point of that movie was to switch completely roles. And that's why people walked out, because they didn't understand that message.
I'm interested to know why they walked out. As far as the movie and how I perceived it, I didn't take that from it with like, oh, women can't cheat. I didn't take that, you know, at all. Or because necessarily kind of sort of explore a little of like, you know, men, it being normalized in their world or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, but like the whole thing is, it's just like, it's like a whole role reversal where it's like Antonio Banderas' character is now the woman because she's doing things as men do. And he is being like, I'll take care of the kids. Don't worry. Did you have the gift? I ordered the gift, or I have to, oh, no worries, and blah, blah. But like, she is doing that male's role because he cannot do a play, but they'll be good.
Oh, as far as like the male is being the artistic one and the female is being the CEO.
Yeah, like, hard-ass. She is the breadwinner in this movie. Mm-hmm. Just like if you would put this movie in a male perspective, that would be Antonio Banderas. And the whole thing would be probably Nicole Kidman character would be a Samuel or something right there. And Nicole Kidman would, there would be a wife where they would play Antonio Banderas' role. So the whole thing, it's like role reversal, gender reversal and everything like that. That's where like people don't understand the lines, especially with like men and people who are not really open-minded to those things. And they're very like narrow into like one perspective. Mm-hmm. I think that also played a part with people walking out because it's like, well, I thought because it was marketed to be this, right? But that's only to get butts in seats. But once you go and see the movie, you're like, oh my God.
That's actually pretty true because what I expected from this movie, was, and you hated that I did that, I said this, was like, well, I expected it to be like a more grounded 50 Shades of Grey. You're like, no. This wasn't going for 50 Shades of Grey. And you know, of course, after we watched the movie, it just had more of an exploration of actual real things as opposed to 50 Shades being a fucking like, Twilight fan fiction.
Especially like I read the books, like I'm fine with it. Like just finished one today, started another one. But like a lot of those books that aren't 50 Shades and are more grounded to it do play a lot with the roles, just like this movie. And I felt like the director probably reads those books and probably like, let me see something, let me do something more into that aspect. Everyone knows that Nicole Kidman doesn't just, oh, they want me for this role, I'll do it. No, like, she really picks her roles. Mm-hmm. Like, but she picks the roles where like they're a little too not normal because nobody does like the roles that she does.
Okay.
And I kind of like it because it gives her like that weird actress vibe. Every role that she gets, she executes.
In this one in particular, she really gave a part of herself specifically in the more vulnerable aspects of it. Because she can, with her tall stature, like it's easy for her, I think it's easy for her to play powerful and elegant by just standing there and like, you know, poised, straight-backed face. Mm-hmm. But then those moments where her character kind of breaks into more, again, rawness and vulnerability, it's like,
and like you can
that's an actress.
And you can tell by like the small details, like there's a moment where her hair is perfect, but then the other moment, like, she looks a little more disheveled. Her hair's a little bit more frizzy. And those are like small details that you don't really notice because you're trying to look at the big picture.
As far as the filmmaking, and we'll wrap that, this movie in just a second. I mean, it did open up like a big discussion. But as far as the filmmaking aspect of this movie, a lot of the shots were indeed like thought out. It's a well-made movie. It looks great. The director is Helene Rain, I believe. Mm-hmm. And she directed the movie Bodies, 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 which was highly recommended. Still yet to see. Heard it was okay.
And it's an A24 film.
Yeah. And this is also an A24 film, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm really curious if any other studio would have made this particular movie. Because a lot of these movies would have been made back then. But, and we've said it before when it came to like A24 films, that spicy subjects, it's perfect in the A24 lane.
Yeah. Because I don't feel anywhere else would they. I feel like it would be more of like how the audience wanted it if it was not A24.
True. Oh, yeah. The studio would have noted the fuck out of it.
Yeah.
But no, it's a, would you suggest, would you advise people to see it?
Yeah. Go see it with open mind. Try to sit through it if you're uncomfortable.
Just sit through the movie. Yeah. Sit through the movie.
Have an inner look inside.
She had told me that she's like, it makes more sense than if you're like a smut book reader, just because of how the beats play out. Because I was like, wait, why was it this awkwardness? But yet this was explored. And she's like, no, because it played exactly how the book read. Like, mm-hmm. Well,
like a book that's would read,
why,
yeah.
Yeah, that's why that shit didn't make sense to me. I got like irritated by it.
Yeah.
But I, you know, it wasn't a terrible movie. I was just more confused.
It's fine. That's why I'm here to guide you through these movies that are confusing.
Condescending son of a... Anyways, the next movie that we had watched is Complete Unknown from director James Mangold. If you're familiar with that name, he directed another biopic, Walk the Line. Johnny Cash biopic. Oh, and as well as... I was like, what other movies have you done? Dude, It blew my freaking mind.
Logan?
On this one. Let me go down the line. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, okay. Logan, Ford v. Ferrari, ooh. The Wolverine, Walk the Line, 310 to Yuma, Girl Interrupted, Identity, Copland, Night and Day, Kate and Leopold, just to name a fucking few. The guy is kind of pretty sort of good at making movies, you know? Because I'm not really familiar with directors' names. Shame on me. But when I went down this line, I was like, holy shit, the guy can do action. He could do biopics, specifically, you know, about musicians. And Ford v. Ferrari, like, that was a subject that I don't care about race cars. I don't care about the origin.
But now you do.
Yeah, of those certain race cars in focus in that movie. And just based off of the sheer movie making aspect of it, it makes you give a shit, which any movie is supposed to actually make you give a shit, because sometimes you don't know what you're going into when you're watching a movie, and specifically with a complete unknown. Hell, even going back to like Walk the Line. Wait, yeah, go ahead.
You said Girl Interrupted?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was such a good movie.
I don't remember a lot of it, but I remember 310 Yuma, Christian Bale too. Moving on, what are your thoughts about A Complete Unknown?
I thought it was done great. I really thought I wasn't going to like this movie because I'm not much of a Bob Dylan fan, but I'm a sucker for biopics, so I would go and see it. But yeah, no, I thought it was done very well, and everything just, I don't know, I just sat there like amazed at the whole thing.
Back in 2005 when Walk the Line came out, I was but a young 15-year-old, and I didn't really care about Johnny Cash because I'm 15 years old, and my musical taste was kind of like all over the place, and the execution of that movie was like amazing, from the story of the acting to like what portion of their lives they wanted to tell. The same thing with A Complete Unknown. And for those who don't know, I enjoy folk music. You know, I've got an eclectic taste, but Bob Dylan's voice kind of deters me from listening to a lot of his songs. Knowing that, I was like, all right, I'll go into this because the director's decent. It looks solid. It's a great trailer. And Timothy Chalamet is, you know, he's had two other movies out earlier this year with Wonka and Dune Part 2. Guy has range, and he continues to show how he has range. And through and through, from the start to finish of this movie, made me care about the character. Now, that being said, and to quote James Mangold, these movies aren't documentaries. So don't go into them going like, oh, is that how it happened? Oh, is that the person that he fell in love with? So things are changed. Things are condensed. Timelines are condensed. Events are kind of moved around just for the betterment of the storytelling. But for the most part, a lot of it is like true to Bob Dylan because he gave his approval. For instance, so Timothy Chalamet obviously plays Bob Dylan, but Al Fanning plays Sylvie Rousseau. But the original woman that he fell in love with, her name was Susie Rutolo, I think. And that was just because she was in the big heartbreak. Mm-hmm. And out of respect, decided to change her name. So just one of those few things. It was done so well. I did look after the fact. I did research on like what top 10 things or whatever facts weren't actually real in the movie. And it didn't like ruin the movie for me or anything like that. In fact, it was just another moment to learn more about Bob Dylan past what the movie was trying to tell, which is that this is Bob Dylan in the late 60s, 19 years old, not famous, a complete unknown, one would say. And arrives to New York seeking, I guess, like going to his idol, Woody Guthrie. It takes off from there because he befriends Pete Seeger, played by Ed Norton, who is so transformative in his role. Amazing. Ed Norton never ceases to amaze with his acting roles. I don't want to ruin anything. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, if you know Bob Dylan, maybe you know some of his story, but like, you know, some of his love affairs I wasn't familiar with.
I definitely had to look up right now if he was still alive, because I'm like...
No, I said earlier he gave his approval.
Well, I know, but I don't know. He might have given his approval and then died later on.
Oh, yeah, Ray Charles.
Yeah, like, you know, I don't know. A lot of people are, you know, out of here.
2024 was a hard year.
All right, so I just don't know. I just had to double check. I don't want to, like, assume that he's still alive, and then I'd be like, later on, be like, oh no, he died in 2024, early 2024. We're just like, you know, January, where you forget almost everyone that passed away in the beginning of the year.
just to get off of the fuck that rant was. I want to give like quick honorable mention to a few other actors in here because it's a very well star studded cast. Mm-hmm. Monica Barbaro, who plays Joan Baez. She was amazing in a Netflix series called FUBAR, with like Arnold Schwarzenegger comedy series. Amazing. You would have seen her though in Top Gun Maverick. She played Phoenix, one of the pilots. I mentioned Ed Norton. He's amazing in this. Need I say more about him? Elle Fanning is stunning. I do wish she was more involved in the movie, but it's a Bob Dylan movie, not a Sylvie movie. And then one name you're probably not familiar with, but this guy, I've seen him in a handful of things. Boyd Holbrook, who played Johnny Cash. A good casting for Johnny Cash, in fact. But you would have known him as a villain in Logan. In Indiana Jones, he was a villain. And in Sandman, you guessed it, he was a villain. But he plays a good Johnny Cash.
But he's a villain.
And a very important role as Johnny Cash in Bob Dylan's life. So the one, like...
Oh, that's him?
Yeah.
And Bike Riders?
Oh, that's right. He was in Bike Riders.
Okay.
Damn it. That's a great movie.
It's such a good movie, yeah.
Yeah, we saw that one earlier in the year. The Bike Riders is fantastic. So, full disclosure, for a couple of days before seeing this movie, I was in a... I don't want to put it lightly and say bad mood. I deal with depression every now and again, and I was in a depressive state, and I was like, well, we were planning to go see this movie. You know, for those who have mental health issues, if ever you're anxious or if ever you're depressed, do those things, stressed, anxious, and depressed. Do life events, you know, even though you're feeling those ways, because you'll still remember back the happy memories and stuff like that. Just a quick aside, something to talk on. But that being said, the reason why I bring that up is because after watching this movie, it put me back into a good place because of the message that it was telling, specifically the story of Bob Dylan in this place of his life of like having this raw talent and trying to do his own thing and being put in this, his music being put in this box of folk, even though he's like, I mean, it's, you know, I guess it's just what I play. It's not really... And I guess it's called folk music, whatever, you know. And then he, you know, it was a big thing back in the 60s when Bob Dylan went electric. It was huge. And so the end of that movie explores, I mean, the whole movie explores that. But the end of that movie lands in that place. But ultimately, like, for someone like myself, who I consider myself a creative and deal with a lot of, you know, I'm like hypersensitive to people's opinions and, you know, just... Overall, like what people think of me, and I would like to talk about the things that I do and want feedback. And for, you know, I take everything like to heart. I wish I was more like Bob Dylan, who's just like going through life, doing his thing.
Fuck it.
To the best of his ability. Really not like the whole conflict of the movie wasn't that he was like, well, should I do my own thing or should I not do my thing? He's like, I'm going to do my own thing, but if you guys can get the fuck out of the way, that'd be great, you know? So he was like a very just chill, layback fucking dude.
Nonchalant.
Super, by the way, to a fault. Yeah, to a fault, which, you know, I think that's the problem I struggle with, that as much as I want to do my own thing, the other half of me that is very much a people pleaser is like, well, it's going to make these people unhappy and this situation uncomfortable. Mm. And so then I sacrifice and compromise my happiness and whatever. But I'm working on
it. I just go.
Yeah. So this movie made me really happy. It cheered me up. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, I have my creative thoughts and ideas in my head. I'm going to do what the fuck I think is good for the things I'm doing, no matter what anyone else is saying or feeling and, you know, scoffing at. Like, fuck it. You know, we're on this ride. Just the once, why not do the most that you can out of it, whether it be a silly little podcast or videos or whatever it may be, you know, just doing something creative and doing it out of the passion of your own soul is such, I don't use this word often because I'm not religious, but it's such like a blessing, you know, to have discovered something creatively, that I'm creatively, passionately creative about. And this movie just put me on that right track of like, you know what? You're right. It was such an amazing message for anyone who's creative that
do the thing.
Is looking for that particular message. See this movie. For someone who loves Bob Dylan, see this movie. For somebody who doesn't love Bob Dylan, still see this movie. It's a great, it's a fantastic movie. It's mm-hmm. well shot. The entire movie plays out kind of like a folk song where there's nothing too flashy. It's moderately paced and it's rich. The story is rich. There's never really a dull moment. There's not anything that I didn't like about it.
And even like the music that is not Bob Dylan that's being played in the background in certain scenes, it really is to that decade that they're in, that year, specific to that year, specific to whatever it is. The fact that in one of the scenes, they're playing a Kink song and I'm just like, excuse me. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm all on board. I'm like, I feel like I am Bob Dylan without being the Bob Dylan.
Yeah. And then as far as the music itself, some biopics, musical biopics, sometimes will play the original music. So then the actors are lip syncing. At other times, they'll have another band playing the music, like La Bamba. They had Los Lobos mm-hmm. play the music. And then you have movies like Back to Black, where it's a combination of the two. Same thing with Ray Charles, mm-hmm. the biopic, and Walk the Line. Walk the Line, was because James Mangold was just the actors doing their full singing. All that to say is, in a complete unknown, everyone, all the actors are singing their characters' parts. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think I like that better, especially if they actually can sing. But I'm sorry, I have to quickly say, if you're just singing a Bob Dylan song, that's really easy to do.
And I think that's one of the things that Timothée Chalamet wanted to do. If he was going to do this role, he wanted to sing the songs, because I feel like he didn't want to like half-ass it.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of Chalamet and his portrayal as, or, I mean, the whole portrayal as of Dylan, they keep his character a mystery. They even comment on how much of a mystery he is, again, to a fault. But it doesn't take away from the movie. I will say that much, because I do. It's like it's an origin story, but without doing any flashbacks of like here's how he was when he was a kid. Because it doesn't matter. What matters, and what his character, what Dylan in the movie is telling his love Sylvie, is it doesn't matter. It's what's in the here and now. Sure, some of those things in the past can inform who you are to a point, but if you want to change, if you have an idea of who the person is you want to be, some of that stuff kind of sort of doesn't matter. I'm no therapist. But in general, I'm saying you have to take that leap and put yourself into whatever character you want yourself to be. And he does it.
Yeah, what you said.
Yeah. Again, to a fault, though. I love Elle Fanning, by the way. I don't think it's a movie that she's in that I don't love.
It took me a while to figure out. I'm like, who is that? Until today.
So if you hadn't guessed it by now, I highly suggest that you see the movie. do you have any other thoughts before I guess the Rotten Tomatoes scores?
No. This one was totally a you review, and the other one was totally a me review.
I do love how evenly that was balanced out. A little bit about romance, a little bit about marriage, a little bit about mental health. But
just doing what you need to do.
Yeah. But we move into our next segment that I've been calling Why Just Tea Gets Fresh. Ooh. I hit the timer. every other episode, we alternate in guessing the Rotten Tomatoes score of the aforementioned movies that we just talked about. I said that, didn't I? Yeah, from 59 and below being rotten and 16 above being fresh. Dear, what do you give?
No, it's your turn my to guess.
Sorry. So used to doing that.
All right. What do you give Baby Girl?
Okay. I give Baby Girl personally a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I think that the critics rated it a 70. Mm-hmm. And I think that the audience rated it a 65, because the audience usually is dumber.
So critics gave it 77. Audience did give 51. But I understand, because it is one of those movies that you have to understand the whole perspective. Kind of leave.
So they rated it higher. Okay, so the critics rated it higher and the audience rated it much lower. I gave the audience way too much fucking credit.
Okay. A complete unknown.
I give it an 85%. Mm-hmm. Probably it would give it higher, whatever, but at the time I wrote it down, I gave it an 85%. I think the critics also rated an 85%, and I think the audience enjoyed it at an 80%.
Okay.
Because James Mangold is gold.
Critics gave it a 78, and audience gave it a 96.
Oh, sweet.
So you're
nice.
So you're in the middle of both.
This Rotten Tomatoes game is just for fun, right? I don't really give a lot of weight to the Rotten Tomatoes thing, only because the times that we've actually like opened up some of the reviews, we're like, oh, that person's just a jackass. Fuck that person. But still, somewhere in the microcosm of it, it does make me happy to know that the audience enjoyed it a lot more, specifically this one, because I do hold this movie precious. By the way, again, I like folk music. This movie made me fall like back in love with folk music. I haven't picked up my guitar. Jesus, I haven't picked up my guitar in a year. And I finally, after those 365 days, I picked it up, plucked out a couple songs, and my fingers are sore because I have no calluses on them. But this movie kind of reminded me of Inside Llewyn Davis, which is a Coen Brothers movie. It explores a fictional character, and this is just my own personal sidebar movie recommendation, starring Oscar Isaac. It's, again, a fictional character, Llewyn Davis, in his exploration of depression. There you go. I relate to that. And him being a folk singer and just trying to gain some fame and some success. Music is beautiful. If you've ever seen any other Coen Brothers movie, they give so much of a shit about the music. They hire well-known artists specifically. And this one, it was Justin Timberlake, the Punch Brothers, and the Milk Carton Boys, amongst a few others who were phenomenal in this. And love the soundtrack, love that thing. So anyways, I need to rewatch that movie because there was a quote. The first spoken line in that movie is, "If it isn't new and it never gets old, then it's a folk song."
Is that the movie that has the rocket ship song?
Yeah. Oscar Isaac.
Adam Driver.
Adam Driver and Justin Timberlake sing this, at the time, like a very poppy song. So much fun.
Very folky pop.
Watch that movie if you haven't seen it. Man, you're hurting yourself. Coen Brothers movie. Just go down the whole list of Coen Brothers movies. They're wonderful. But anyways, yeah. That's my thoughts on the, as far as Rotten Tomatoes, these particular movies. So there you have it.
There you go.
There it is. There's still no like smooth out on that. I need a shorter version. Anyways, so now we move on to our next thing, which we're revisiting the brackets, right? The year-end review. This is now Alva's brackets. Let's go down that list. Reminder.
Yeah.
I won.
Here's Terrifier 3. We get it.
Yeah. I was gonna do it as a clean edit, but that's perfect enough.
I won.
You can see it there. See, look at Terrifier 3. Drew a versus and everything. Anyways, okay. Alva, don't look at the list. I'm gonna go down it. We're gonna kind of sort of rapid fire, but if you want to give some of your quick analysis on the movies, you may do so.
Okay.
The last episode was a long one, and so will this one be. Let's start off. I don't have any music, sorry. Saturday Night versus Queer.
Oh, I'm gonna go with Queer.
Transformers 1 versus Night Swim.
Night Swim.
Really?
Yeah. Transformers 1 was good, but I don't know, something about Night Swim was there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Watch my review on 400 Films. The Substance and Subservience. That's an easy one.
The Substance. I was gonna say The Subservience.
Oh, this is here's a freaking polio kid versus Arnold Schwarzenegger. Borderlands versus Deadpool Wolverine.
Deadpool Wolverine.
I would have hit you so hard on camera. You would have been Borderlands. The Watchers or Megalopolis. Remember The Watchers?
I got to look up the thing
that's, real quick. That's Dakota Fanning. The fairies.
Oh, the one where they're just like in a cabin or whatever. Yeah. Or it's was M.
Night Shyamalan's kid.
The Watchers.
The Watchers or Megalopolis.
The Watchers.
Ooh, man. We saw a lot of bad movies over the year, and Megalopolis was not the worst one. Mufasa or Wicked.
Wicked.
Sting, that's a mutated spider creature feature in the apartment building one.
Oh, okay.
Or Imaginary, the Blumhouse one with the...
Oh, with the bear?
Teddy bear, yeah.
Sting or Imaginary. Can you remind me what Imaginary was a little bit more about?
Imaginary friends, they go... It's kind of like an Alice in Wonderland. They go through the doors, like Monster Inc. meets Alice in Wonderland.
Is that the one with Ryan Reynolds?
No, that's If, which is later in the brackets.
Oh, Imaginary. Oh. Mm. Was the other one Sting?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I'm going to go with Sting because... Mm-hmm. No, Imaginary, because now I remember it had that weird thing. Yeah, Imaginary.
Yeah, I remember you liked it more. We Live in Time or Cuckoo?
What is We Live in Time again?
Andrew Garfield, Florence Pugh, She's Dying, Tarantino timeline jump around.
Shoot, those a lot are two of crying. Good movies. And Cuckoo's another good one. It's very... Oh, God. I can't pick. We Live in Time.
Yeah, thank you. I was like... Cuckoo was good, but We Live in Time was so much better. Although the different movies, we were like, do we do these in categories? But we decided we're lazy and no.
But I like the so here's the thing. Like, those two movies are two different genres that I like.
Yeah.
So it's very hard for me to just pick one of those.
It's all for shits and gigs, and we're going to see if we do this again in the end of 2025. Okay. Late Night with the Devil or Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire?
Ooh, Late Night with the Devil.
Absolutely. David Dastmalchian. Is amazing in that movie. Do yourself a favor, watch that one. Baby Girl versus Sonic 3. Completely opposite movies.
Oh my God. shoot. I liked both of them.
After your entire 20 minutes of your discussion, you had so much more to say about Baby Girl and Sonic 3. Not that I'm making a decision for you, but...
No, but I... But like, Sonic 3 gave me back that, like...
This is actually a discussion.
Yeah, no, it gave me back that Jim Carrey love. True. Yeah. But Baby Girl was very like a thinker kind of in a way. Oh, God. Oh, no.
I really thought I was going to pre-circle this one for you, but all right.
Oh, are we going to circle it?
Go ahead.
Baby Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The bike riders or now you didn't see this one, but it happened to land on your list. The Bike Riders or Ninja Scroll. It's an anime movie. 30-year anniversary. Yeah, Bike Riders. It was really good. Venom 3 or Long Legs?
Oh, it was Long Legs.
The one with Nicolas Cage.
Oh, shoot. Goddamn. Venom 3 made me cry. Long Legs was...
Really?
Yeah. Because it was kind of like a goodbye kind of thing.
It was Venom the Last Dance.
Yeah, and it was kind of also... I don't know. I'm a very sentimental person now. 35. Very sentimental. I guess Long Legs.
Okay. Dune, speaking of Timothée Chalamet, Dune Part 2 or Ghostbusters The Frozen Empire?
Oh, shit. Ghostbusters.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's surprising.
I'm not much of a Dune person. I will watch them, but it does not.
Alien Romulus or Y2K?
Ooh. Oh, that's such a good one. Alien Romulus.
Yeah, absolutely, dude.
Get back that horror movie vibe. Yeah.
Okay. The one you were thinking of, if.
Nosferatu.
She saw the list.
Really. I saw that one.
I was trying to get a reaction out of her, but, you know, whatever. All can go well. If versus Nosferatu.
Nosferatu.
Absolutely. And lastly, Smile 2 versus Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
But Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes was really good.
It was really good.
And what was the other one?
But which one do you remember?
What was
Smile 2?
Smile 2? Kingdom of the Planet of
the Apes. Planet of Apes. P-O-A. Okay, let's go back. Queer versus Night Swim.
Ooh, Night Swim? No, I go back Queer.
Not, was it because I made a face?
No.
Okay. The Substance versus Deadpool Wolverine.
Oh, Deadpool Wolverine.
Oh, all right. Yeah, no, for sure you have to, right? The Watchers versus Wicked.
Wicked.
Absolutely. Imaginary versus We Live in Time.
Imaginary.
Really?
It made me afraid of of my stuffed animals.
Oh my God. Did you see the clip I sent you, by the way? Sorry, this is, we'll edit this out.
I have not.
Is this like
I have not gone through my
horror film in the 90s or whatever, and these dolls are all alive and they, anyway.
Oh no, I sent you that where the dad's like, what are you talking about?
I conflate the two.
You told me that the toys come alive at night and all the dolls just look at him. He starts crying. I'll be like, yep.
They're all whispering like,
sending that to you. And I'm just like, forget it.
They're deciding if they're going to kill you or whatever they say. Okay,
it's imaginary. It's called dolls. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Late Night with the Devil or Baby Girl?
Late Night with the Devil.
Nice. Nice. Proud of you. Horror fan comes through. The Bike Riders or Long Legs?
Bike Riders.
Yep. Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire or Alien Romulus?
Alien Romulus.
Good. Carl. Good girl. Baby girl.
Ew.
Nosferatu or Planet of the Apes?
Nosferatu.
Absolutely. Now let's go back. Queer versus Deadpool Wolverine.
Deadpool Wolverine.
Absolutes. Wicked versus Imaginary.
Ooh, Wicked.
Yeah. Whoa. The pause there. Oh my God. Do you want me to edit that out?
No, I just said, oh, Wicked. Don't put words in my mouth.
I've actually done that in a past podcast and she doesn't know. Late Night with the Devil versus Bike Riders.
Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah. Alien Romulus versus Nosferatu.
Nosferatu.
Duh.
The fuck?
All right, here we go. Last four. Deadpool. Clean edit.
Wicked.
Deadpool.
Get out of town. Let me a musical.
And we know that this last is going to be Nosferatu, right?
Yeah, Nosferatu. Devil, yeah.
Yeah. Which means that Nosferatu versus Wicked. Oh, boy.
My two loves this is clashed together.
Quite the upset, as well as my fucking microphone falling apart.
Okay, so Wicked, you have this great story, songs, popular, and you got part two coming out, but then you have Nosferatu, and it goes in depth with my Victorian era love and all these other things and symbolisms within these things, and then it goes into this and folklore and somehow into Greek mythology in a way. Oh, God. Nosferatu.
Nosferatu wins it. There you go. So, Terrifier 3 versus Nosferatu. Geez, so it's horror against horror. Oh, boy. I mean, Terrifier 3. I mean, this was a great year. 2024 was a great year for horror films. And that's you're putting a B-movie up against a very artistic, well-done horror. Okay. Which I wasn't scared in either of them, but...
Okay, so here's the thing. With Terrifier 3, it's more like a slasher gore movie, right?
You'll
full
say.
On just like full on like just gore movie. Yeah. Like there's you could just watch it for fun.
It's the two types of horror,
yeah. But Nosferatu, it brings back light into that forbidden film that was made back in 1922.
So that's true.
It brings back like the love for the gothic horror vibe to it. So like for me to say like, oh, Terrifier 3 or Nosferatu, like Nosferatu was very like done well. And don't get me wrong, I really like Terrifier 3. But if I were to pick between one of the two, I would rather do Nosferatu. Nothing against Art the Clown or anything.
No, of course not.
But like, I could feel like this being one of those movies like that later on, a couple decades from now, it's going to be one of those
revisited
true classic monster movies.
I could also say that about the Terrifier franchises, because I think that it's safe to say that maybe Art the Clown has safely fallen into the horror icon.
Here's where I differentiate Nosferatu, Count Orlok, and Art the Clown. Art the Clown kind of falls more like a slasher, like he will be the next Halloween, like next Michael Myers. That's where it falls under with the supernatural. But you have a classic vampire movie here.
Totally. I'm torn too, because like I want to lean towards Nosferatu, but like I love these two for all different reasons. Can we just tie?
No. Because here's the thing, there's enough slasher movies out there already. There's enough movies, hold on, that have like an Art the Clown feel to it. Like, you know, it's just like another continuation of this. But Nosferatu is just standing by itself. Like, Terrifier 3, it's a trilogy going on to possible number 4 because it's still going. But Nosferatu, it's just, there's no continuation. That's it. It's just bringing back the love for Dracula. That love to the classic horror monsters they're coming back slowly. Yeah. Like, you got The Bride and you got Frankenstein coming out in 2025. And that's kind of bringing back your classics to where it's going back to, like, Dracula. And,
but my argument is that both of these movies do something big, but same, but different. In that, like, Terrifier does something where, because they made so much money, it was such a success, not just because of the money, but the passion. Both of these movies, there's passion that went into it. One was like, let's do a crap load of gore and people are going to love it. They made a horror icon, Art the Clown, and, you know, it was an event to go see it, as well as Nosferatu, which cinematically, Nosferatu did a big thing for all the reasons, and I 1,000% agree with you for all the reasons that you said. Which is why, like, I feel in this particular case, even though they're both in the genre of horror, they're such on two different sides of the same horror coin. I really want to make it a tie because they're so. But I think both of them are very important in the movie realm.
No, definitely, yeah, definitely. But I feel like if we are talking about just bringing these two movies together and seeing which one wins, kind of thing, or like putting a thing like 30 years from now,
let's settle this then.
Okay. Rock, paper, scissors?
No, since we are a movie podcast and we love the passion of movie, then it has to land on Nosferatu for winning it, because Nosferatu is just such a cinematic masterpiece. So there you have it. There it is. I don't feel like necessary to do that movie music, but whatever. There you go.
Sorry.
That's our brackets. We may do it again. We may not do it again. We had a fun argument out of it, but anyhow.
You came with no facts. I was comparing movies over here.
Good shit. I love it. Okay. And then last but not least, again, this is an episode of running really long, but let's quickly run down our most anticipated films in 2025. You want to kick it off first?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. So my most anticipated would be Love Hurts.
Oh, with Ke Huy Quan?
Yeah. And I guess he's doing all his the martial arts and stuff in that one. Companion, I think that one's like a A24 horror movie that's coming out in February or something like that. Mickey 27.
Oh, yeah. Not only do I have that on the list, but it's because that's from director Bong Joon-ho, who directed Parasite, which you still yet to see, which is amazing. And it's starring Robert Pattinson. Looks amazing.
Well, I can't see.
Comes out April.
Parasite, 18th. Because I'm allergic to peaches.
I know. I shouldn't have told you that. Okay, go on.
I already said Ballerina, right?
Yep.
The F1 movie, definitely. Absolutely. For sure. That one's on there. Let me see. Paddington in Peru, that was just like a thing that, I don't know. I have a thing for like any Peter Rabbit or something like that. Death of a Unicorn. It just seemed like a good fun movie. Freakier Friday, then that just goes back to my nostalgia kind of thing of like,
There will be a reels out soon where we have learned the dance, the handshake.
No, that's for Parent Trap.
Scratch that. I didn't say anything.
Then we got 28 Years Later.
Yeah.
The Bride. Of course, Fantastic Four. And I just have to see that one to see where it lands.
Did on you my see that it was called Fantastic Four First Steps?
I don't know what it was called. I just put Fantastic Four. Anyways, I want to see where that lands on my Fantastic Four barometer of whatever it is. You have The Bride, and then you have Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein.
Yeah, man.
And that, then...
On the last live, we were like, I was like, wait, no, wait, Guillermo del Toro. I forgot there's going to be two basically Frankenstein movies coming out next year. This year. I said, I'm doing that thing next year, this year.
And then, of course, Wicked for Good.
Absolutely. Yeah. When does that come out?
That one comes out November 27th.
Boy. Oh, boy. I'm excited for that.
So those are my list. I don't know if any of those are on yours.
Some of them, yeah. I crossed some of mine out. I'll go down my list. It's chronologically. So Wolfman is going to be probably one of the first movies
I've
seen this year.
That's
the
one I forgot. Yeah. That's next. Two weeks from now.
In that dark universe, I want to see how they do Wolfman. Captain America, Brave New World, every trailer that comes out, it just shows how amazing that movie is going to be.
It's called Brand New World.
Brand New World, Brave New World. It's going to come out Valentine's Day.
Going back to my Nosferatu thing, see how they have Wolfman and you got Frankenstein at the end of the year? You're bringing back classic monsters back.
No, absolutely. Cutting all that out. So Sinners with Michael B. Jordan is Ryan Coogler movie. Somebody was saying that it was like, it's actually a horror film, which I wish I didn't know because I wanted to go into that knowing nothing. But now I know a little. I'm still pretty sure that I'm going to enjoy the hell out of that. It's coming out in March. Thunderbolts in the MCU realm looks fun. It's like the I wouldn't say Dark Avengers, but like Asshole Avengers. Mm-hmm. Looks fun. More trailers have come out. That's coming out in May, the day after my birthday. Mission Impossible, you mentioned, right?
No.
No? Fuck, dude. All the Mission Impossible movies. Those things are an event.
The fact that this is the last, quote-unquote, last one.
Hopefully. The guy could only, like, run like that for so long.
I feel like he could still do more.
Did you mention Superman?
No.
Yeah. Come on. We're going to see our new Superman, David Cornsweet, on July 11th. That's going to be amazing.
Birthday weekend.
Tron Ares. I actually like the Tron sequel. It was a Tron Legacy. A lot of people shit on that. I think it was like technologically an amazing movie, and as well as the story being okay.
I remember I saw it, but I don't remember it.
I think people are just crapping on like the de-aging or whatever. Mm. But Black Phone 2. Black Phone 1 was really cool. I don't know where they're going with this one. Did he die at the end of one?
I thought he did. I don't know where they're going with this one.
Haunted Phone or whatever. That's in October. Tron Ares is also in October. Predator Badlands is what it's called with Al Fanning. Hmm. Also getting Aliens. But yeah, I said she was going to be in an Aliens movie. My bad. She's going to be in a Predator movie. So I think they were in talks to like relink the Predator and Alien now that like they're doing some good stuff with it. That's coming out in November. And then Avatar, the Blue People, not the Last Airbender, Avatar Fire and Ash is coming out in December, on December 19th.
Avatar, the Blue Man Group.
Those also are spectacles to go see. And as far as just the two movies that I'm not excited to go see are the Minecraft movie and fucking Snow White.
God, oh, yeah. Did you also know that there's going to be a Michael Jackson biopic?
Yeah, I didn't come up on my list, but I've seen, like just photos here and there. Mm-hmm. So it's a big list. I was originally going to be like, five most anticipated movies, but all of these I'm very excited to see. Last year was a great year for horror films. Not a lot of horror films on our list, but hopefully more stuff pops up. But anyways, there's our most anticipated movies. Can we finally wrap the episode and say goodbye to 2024 and say hello to 2025?
Goodbye, 2024. Hello, 2025.
Now that's 25. Leonardo DiCaprio won't date you.
That was a long time ago.
All right. Wrap it up.
Now we got to find out if he's on that list.
Oh, God. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can check us out on our social medias.
FOREHED Films.
Forehead Films.
On Instagram and TikTok.
And on those two platforms, you can like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell. Check out our stories when we're going to do more lives. You're listening to this in the future, so you've already listened to all of these things. But the streams don't always happen weekly. So stay tuned for those things. And again, if you want to support us into the new year, please do so. Go to Venmo at YHSDpod. And I'm starting to put a little more videos out. Maybe I'll start doing full video episodes. We're still working on that. But right now, audio only and some video clips here and there. So you can check those out on the aforementioned platforms as well as YouTube at YHSDpod. So like and share those things. Don't keep us your dirty little secret. Let's get that momentum going. And thank you for being part of our little stupid filmic community because it's just a fun thing to do. Love everybody.
Okay, bye.
But first, lastly,
oh god,
let us know what films are on your growing list of movies that have people asking you the question. You haven't seen that? Why didn't you join me on it? God damn it.
Because you made me say okay, bye early.
Bye, folks.
Okay, bye.
Going into 2025 real shitty. God damn it.